Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to remember those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must henceforth be forever cast into the abyss of dead names. In this moment of our remembrance, we prove with great grief and wailing the sincerity of our noble tolerance. What we once wrongly allowed in the ignorance of white privilege has become the cleansing rite of virtue signaling we use to prove our purity. Join with me now as we remember those we've lost. First, the term food deserts. As Florida State Representative and self-appointed moral advisor to the legislature, Angela Nixon recently explained during a debate on using SNAP benefits for soda, calling those geographic areas where poor people do not have access to quality food close to their homes food deserts is very misleading.
Using the term desert implies that the lack of healthy and affordable food is somehow naturally occurring and obscures that it is the direct result of racially discriminatory policies and a systematic disinvestment in these communities.
Despite being a term popularized by former First Lady Michelle Obama, all hail her grace and beauty, experts in wokery agree with Nixon. Some have complained that there is just as often the problem of the food swamp, which is an area that may have plenty of food options, but all of them are bad, such as gas stations, convenience stores, liquor stores, and fast food. But even the term food swamp has problems since, as Rep. Nixon explained, both terms make the problem seem like a naturally occurring phenomenon rather than as the result of systemic racism.
Food deserts are not naturally occurring. They are the result of systemic racism and oppression in the form of zoning codes, lending practices, and other discriminatory policies rooted in white supremacy.
You preach, sister. But beyond this problem, food desert is a term created by outsiders that marginalizes the alternate food styles available in oppressed communities, such as backyard gardens, co-ops, and farmers markets. So what then should we call these zones? Well, Baltimore has suggested that we call them healthy food priority areas. But we all know that name will never catch on. In focus group testing, we tried a wide range of labels, including sustenance vacuums, fruit-free areas, nutrition ghettos, the vegetable vortex, and circles not okay. Unfortunately, none of these seemed to catch on either, but then we remembered Hinckley's fifth precept of linguistic reform. Always use words that convey such strong emotion that opponents feel embarrassed to disagree with them. When you can win the debate by terminological manipulation so that you don't even have to have the debate, that is a win indeed. Thus, the current preferred approach is to refer to areas of food apartheid because it conveys the systemic racism that kept black South Africans oppressed, jailed, or killed, and now keeps black Americans obese. It also reminds people that African-American obesity is the result of racism from white people rather than from choices made by the people who actually eat the food. We always want to empower the powerless by telling them that they have no power at all over anything in their lives. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, we want to express our utmost satisfaction at the fine work being done at Anheuser-Busch to deconstruct the entire concept of gender. As you are all, I'm sure, aware, this week we learned that Bud Light made special cans with the face of trans influencer Dylan Mulvaney on them and sent several to her in honor of her first year as a woman. Along with rainbow-themed cans, Budweiser is thus boldly declaring their love and affection for all people of the acronym. Even though this is sure to cost them sales with those backward savages who believe that sex is biologically determined, we of course couldn't be prouder of their choice to give money to an influencer who was once a man, rather than giving money to another influencer who has always been a woman. But Budweiser did not act alone. We also learned this week that Nike is joining the fight to honor womanhood by having Dylan be their spokesotherin for their Nike Women line of sports bras and leggings, showing that the best way to be a woman is to start out as a man. There's simply nothing more inspiring to women than watching another woman with a man's body put on a sports bra and yoga pants and show them how a woman really exercises. But that's not all. Dylan Mulvaney has represented many, many brands, including Ulta Beauty, Crest, Kate Spade, Maybelline Cosmetics, Native Deodorant, and our personal favorite, Tampax. That's right, Tampax, because who better to recommend the perfect period products than someone who doesn't have them? So to all those commercial brands doing their very best to completely eradicate the meaningfulness of sex and gender, we salute you. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And finally, we want to take a moment to celebrate one of our very favorite people for doing one of our very favorite things, First Lady Jill Biden. who this week made a giant stride toward equality by promising to tell her husband, Joe, to invite the University of Iowa Uterus Havers basketball team, the non-winners of the non-testicle-having NCAA basketball tournament, to the White House for a celebration of their non-victory.
So I know we'll have the champions come to the White House. We always do. You know, we'll have LSU come. But you know what? I'm going to tell Joe, I think Iowa should come too, because they played such a good game. So, right? So winners and losers, that's sportsmanship. That's good sportsmanship.
Now, without dwelling too much on it, can we all acknowledge the fine work displayed here in the First Lady saying she would tell Joe rather than ask him? A true feminist never asks for anything from a man. Nice. But also, the broader point here is that in one beautiful gesture, Ms. Biden has almost entirely rendered the concepts of winning and competition completely meaningless, which we love. Obviously, the whole premise of being adversaries and seeking to vanquish opponents gives our stomachs the queasies. Just think how awful it must be to lose that game by 17 points. Wouldn't it be better to not keep score at all? Just like we tell children that it's the thought that counts and that the important thing is for them to have fun, we definitely need to reorient this culture of toxic masculinity around the concepts of cooperation and camaraderie. In offering the same reward to the non-first place team as is offered to the non-second place team, Dr. Biden showed that she understands how much we need to get away from the white colonizer-oppressor notions of accountability, results, winners, losers, points, and, well, sports in general, and instead focus on the equality for all idea. It is the effort that counts, not the score, which reminds us of the wise words of comfort offered by that other shero of anti-capitalism, Vice President Kamala Harris, when she spoke to the non-winning, non-menstruating person basketball team from her alma mater, Howard University.
You played hard, you played to the very last second. You hustled out there, you are smart, you are disciplined, you put everything you had into the game. And you know, that's what it's about, right?
That is what it's all about. Winning doesn't matter, and only meanies think it does. So good work, Kamala, and good work, Jill. You are both so smart.
You guys did that.
Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, with these cleansing rites performed, may we all go forth in loving tolerance and microaggress no more. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.